Welcome to the Huntback Country Podcast. This is episode number 459, and our guest, Joe, is a listener of the podcast who had a truly once-in-a-lifetime hunt this last fall as he drew a bighorn sheep tag in Colorado. Now, before you maybe tune out and think, oh, well, I'll never have that hunt, I'd encourage you to listen to Joe's story, both because it's entertaining and enjoyable, but also because for any hunt, any new hunt, there's so much you can learn. And as we're in the time of year right now, as this episode is releasing, many draw results are coming out across many states. And I've already heard from many guys who got lucky and they drew a tag that they never thought they would have. And so how do you go about planning a hunt when you're not familiar with the state or the area or the species? We get into how Joe planned this hunt, his scouting, the logistics, the help that he was able to find along the way, and of course, tell the hunt story itself. So this is a great one that almost anyone can pull some lessons away from. As always, guys, if you are enjoying the show, it helps us a ton if you can leave a rating or a review in whatever podcast app that you're using, or just share the show with a friend. That would be great. Right now, let's go ahead and dive into this conversation with Joe. Well, Joe, welcome to the podcast. I am really excited to chat with you today. Before we dive into the hunt story, just share a little bit of background context for who you are, where you're coming from.
Yeah, thanks. So excited to be here too, to share a little bit of the story, hopefully some lessons learned. But so my name is Joe. I live here in Denver. I grew up in New Mexico and grew up hunting and fishing in kind of northern New Mexico, southern Colorado. Ended up going to school here in Colorado after I graduated high school, and have since been here. Had the opportunity to dip my toes into being a fly fishing guide for a handful of years. And that led me and my dad ultimately to purchase some property down in southern Colorado, where that has since become kind of my stomping grounds, the place that I'm most familiar with. So yeah, spend a lot of time elk hunting down there, primarily deer hunting when I get a chance. And this year, yeah, was grateful to draw a bighorn sheep tag down in that same unit.
And there's just one of those tags in that unit, if I understand correctly?
Yeah, there's a couple of tags, but it was only one ram tag, yes.
Gotcha. So what did that, because I pulled back all of our emails in April of 23, you reached out and it was, I think, fairly shortly after you found out you drew the tag.
Yep.
Like, what did that look like for you? So as a resident, even with points and everything else, like, was this just still a complete, total long shot shock, or what was that like?
For sure. You know, I've been putting in for, I believe I had somewhere in the ballpark of like about 10 combined points since they do the weighted and the preference. But there were so many point holders ahead of me that I was aware of looking at the statistics. So never did I think that I would actually draw this thing in the near term. So yeah, I was completely shocked, completely blown away by it.
Yeah, that's great. It's unique to draw it, one. And then the fact that it is obviously an area you're familiar with from elk hunting, fly fishing, a family cabin, that type of thing. I'm curious, though, how much of that experience intersected with where the sheep actually are? Meaning, were you seeing sheep while you were elk hunting, that type of thing? Just historically, were you aware of kind of like where they tended to be in that unit or in that mountain range?
So it's interesting in that the unit itself is massive. And so to your point, the areas that I spent most of my time fishing in, you know, sure, there was some overlap, but it definitely wasn't primarily sheep country. I would come across some here and there, always be thrilled, you know, when I saw them. But I think it just was happenstance. They just happened to be cruising through. There's one resident group that does stick around close to a roadway. that I see, you know, especially in the wintertime, down in and around there. But going into this hunt, you know, I definitely wanted to be more backcountry, in an ideal world, wanted to be off the beaten path, and try to have to earn it a little bit. But yeah, so I was aware of areas, but I hadn't firsthand spent a ton of time in a lot of the areas that I ended up sheep hunting into.
What is the season dates for this? Because I'm assuming, like, if you had a long season date, to your point, you could have waited till maybe later and weather pushed sheep down. But was that an opportunity for this tag? Was it a shorter season?
It was, so the tag itself, it was something along the lines of like 30 or 31 days total. So started on the, what would that have been? September 5th was the opening day.
Okay. So, yeah, so mostly the month of September into early October then.
Exactly. Yep. So like, sure, it could have pushed some down in early October, but you know, had it gotten to that point, it would have been rolling the dice for sure to try to bank on that.
Did you, I'm assuming you draw a tag like this, it's so unexpected, you know, unique opportunity, like everything else becomes off the table. Were you able to devote a ton of time, not only to the hunt itself, but I'm sure you were itching to get scouting as soon as you found out you drew the tag. Were you able to make a good time investment?
For sure. So, my train of thought immediately went to, you know, trying to get the hall passes lined up to make sure that I could devote ample time. And so, first order of business was checking in on the home front. You know, once I actually registered that I had actually drawn the tag, after rereading the email, you know, probably 100 times, I texted my wife and let her know, and so, you know, kind of knowing that she'd be supportive, but also like, all right, what is her true reaction going to be, knowing that the tag or the season itself runs for 30 days. And so, that evening it was awesome. We had a great conversation. She knows how passionate I am about getting out and pursuing these animals, and so she was like, we'll make it work. You know, this is April, planning for September, and so we'll make it work. And so, knowing that I already had that, you know, next hurdle was checking in at work. And so I'm fortunate enough to be in a position at work where I've been there for a long time, you know, have plenty of PTO, but also is part of talking it through with my wife. Like, we wanted it, if at all possible, to angle for not only having this be all of my vacation time for the year, right? And still be able to do our normal life. And so that's how I approached my work and my team, and thankfully had support there too. And so, with both of those pieces lined up, I went into it within about a week or two of drawing the tag, having a mindset of saying, I'm dedicating up to, you know, 30 days for this hunt, should it take that long. And that's kind of the starting point for my planning.
Yeah. Wow. What else was early in planning? You know, there's several things that come to mind. One is, like, if you're going to be in this country and maybe sheep countries, even though it's the same unit, different than where you found elk or that type of time, like, there could be some gear logistics. There could be, in my mind, I would think networking, just because previous hunters of the tag can be more helpful because it obviously is not a competition type thing when there's only one guy with a ram tag per year in this unit. So I guess, you know, early on, even before, like, necessarily boots on the ground scouting, what were some of those other things you were trying to figure out?
Definitely. So that's where my mind went also, is yeah, trying to come up with a plan for how to gather, you know, how do we even approach gathering the information that I would need? Because, you know, after so many years of applying, I realized I didn't really have a clue how to hunt bighorn sheep. Sure, I knew certain terrain, but like, I didn't know habits, I didn't know patterns, any of that stuff. So yeah, absolutely wanted to try to extend that knowledge. So first I started scouring online for books, you know, various resources. So tracked down a handful of books. You know, some were pretty outdated, but still relevant and helpful. And then at the same time, I started scouring through various podcasts, trying to track down, okay, anybody who has had experience sheep hunting, I'm sure I could gather some pieces of information from some of their stories and lessons learned. And then at the same time, you know, it was just kind of extending it out to my own personal network. And so I'm down where the cabin is. I have a family friend who's essentially family at this point, but he drew that tag. Had to have been 25 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago. And so he had firsthand experience of actually chasing them, was unsuccessful, but had some opportunities. So that he was a great resource. And then, you know, just also finding out how willing and open people are for a limited tag like this to share information. And so before I knew it, I was hearing of friends or family members of friends and, you know, people who might hold different roles in the Forest Service or in, you know, the Colorado Division of Wildlife or whatever, to try to just start, you know, picking people's brains. And so what I did was I just created a spreadsheet that, you know, tried my best to capture contacts, you know, when I was talking to them, notes after talking to them. And then I would use that then to start putting together a plan for some e-scouting, even before I actually got some boots on the ground to get out there and start scouting. So, yeah, I was fully occupied and my head was spinning so fast, you know, within weeks of drawing the tag, it felt like I was already going.
Yeah. That sounds like such a solid thing to make those contacts, but also have this system of what am I doing with all this information? Or sometimes I've noticed in the past, and I don't just mean about talking about hunts, but like you have a conversation with someone, you get some great information, but unless you do write that down, you assume you're going to remember it, but then you have other conversations or days pass and then it's like, oh, I'm fuzzy, what did we discuss, what did we say, what would, you know?
And then before you know it, it's like you're talking to the next person, you can't remember who told you what or who mentioned a possible rancher or a grazer or whoever, and you're like, man. So yeah, finding a way to capture and record that was essential in, you know, me being able to even follow up with people, and not be starting at ground zero with that conversation again.
You mentioned e-scouting. Was that, how much of that, I guess, was trying to e-scout the animal versus, e-scout what's huntable, like things like access and glassing points versus like getting really specific on, say, like habitat, for example, if that makes sense, that question.
Yeah, I think once I started getting, you know, I in checking in with people, I started getting kind of some different zones where people had either seen sheep in the past or were aware of some, you know, resident populations. And so I started kind of determining, okay, where is that, in overlaying that with my unit to try to determine, okay, where does that line up with where my mind is at for my own expectations for like what I'm seeking out of this hunt. And so, you know, like I said, I think pretty early on as part of the planning, I also got some really awesome advice out of the gates too. And I've heard it numerous times, you know, with the guests on your show or on the podcast, is like making sure that you spend some time early on the front end to truly think about what your own expectations are for the experience and for the hunt. And so, you know, I went into this knowing that this is likely the only bighorn sheep tag, you know, ram tag that I'll ever draw in my life, more likely than not. And so I wanted to truly tackle this in a way that would fulfill me as best as possible. And so as part of doing that, I wanted to be backpacking. I wanted it to be in the wilderness, in an ideal situation. I wanted it to be like high alpine. And, you know, then after that, then, you know, start actually thinking about the animal. I would love for it to be a solid, mature, you know, representation of what a mature ram looks like in that area. So like My first priority was the setting and kind of the background, and then the secondary piece was the animal. And so I was thinking, if I even had a chance at, what maybe wouldn't be the largest ram in the unit, but it checked all the other boxes, I knew that I was going to be content with that. And so that's kind of where I was at. And so going back to your question, I would use that as my kind of lens that I was looking at this through to then determine, okay, where are my zones that I'm more excited about? And from there, then I started slicing it further to say, okay, now I can start looking at access. Now I can start trying to look at glassing knobs or water sources or any of those things. So it was a little bit, backwards, but it was progressing toward, the actual e-scouting as we all know it, to try to get to, all right, how's this going to help me when I'm in the field?
Yeah, I love that you had, you thought through the specific expectations. And for you, that was not just animal quality, but experience. I think anybody who listens to the podcast knows that that's like where and I tend to be, where Steve tends to be with hunts. And that's not to say that someone like this shouldn't just go for the biggest ram ever, but regardless of what you want, like being very diligent to think about that ahead of time. Not only for a once in a lifetime tag, honestly, for every hunt. Like, hey, what am I going
Cool.
into this specific hunt? What do I want to get out of this hunt? Like, it's easy just to assume, like, oh, go in, have success, kill something. It's like, no, like, is it about experience? Is it about learning? Is it about, trophy quality? Is it about, helping someone, finding a new area? Like, there's so many different ways. And I think that's part of why there's this whole discussion around like, what is a successful hunt and is it about killing an animal or not? And it's like, well, success, unless you define it, you don't know what it is. And it's okay for hunts to be different and to predefine, like, this is what success looks like. And maybe it's not the animal, you know?
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, like I also like the animal was absolutely part of it, but not the end all be all. So like looking for a 3/4 curl plus and ideally, an 8-year-old plus ram. If it had brooming, heck yeah, like that would be like the icing on top.
For sure.
And so yeah, it was setting that priority list and also trying to figure that out to keep my own discipline while I'm out there, to say, no, I've put the thought into it, because knowing when rubber hit the road, I would probably get really excited the first set of rams that I started seeing.
How much time did you dedicate to boots on the ground scouting prior to season, or were you trying to bank a bunch of your time of like, hey, I have a lot of time, like you said earlier, 30 days, like I'll do what it takes. But did that eat in then into how much time you're able to get and put boots on the ground scouting in?
I would say it tempered it a little bit, but I still definitely wanted to get, boots on the ground out there. And so I ended up doing some of the easier access stuff in mid-June, especially knowing that the snowpack and things were pretty high still, up high in elevation. And then pretty much all of July didn't end up getting out there, just was tied up with family stuff, trying to take advantage of the summer. And then I did end up getting a good backpacking trip. I think I went out for either 3 or 4 nights in late July into some different areas. So that was awesome. Got to check that off the box and explore some new territory. And then at the same time, had an opportunity. I got connected with a previous tag holder from, I think he had the tag either 2 or 3 years ago. And in early August, I was able to just spend an entire day with him. And so while we didn't go out, actually hiking, he drove me around to all the different places in the massive unit that showed me where he would, where he would end up parking, highlight different glassing knobs, like from the easier accessible stuff. And so that was an awesome resource, even though I ended up not really leveraging that nearly as much since I spent so much more time, hiking further back, but it was still great to have that and also have a resource who had firsthand experience right there in the unit for how to navigate it in various access points.
Well, I have other questions I kind of want to ask pre-hunt, but I also for this time like want to get into it. One thing, I had you send me some like notes on like any notable moments, stuff we want to make sure and hit. And one of them was very unfortunate, but just a curveball of sounds like a fairly major car wreck right before your hunt got started that had to have been stressful to deal with.
Oh yeah, that was a pretty significant curveball. Yeah, naturally, it's about a week and a half prior to the hunt. I'm running around like crazy, trying to make sure everything here at home is taken care of. And it was a Sunday afternoon. I actually went out on a grocery run. Was in my wife's car, and there I am at a red light, and my light turns green. I start going to turn left, and guy coming the opposite direction just completely blew the red light and T-boned me. And I saw it was one of those moments where it happened in slow motion, where it was enough that thankfully he ended up hitting the front of the car, and it probably missed my driver's side door and like the whole kind of passenger compartment by inches. And so the entire engine section of the car was completely damaged. It spun me around 360 degrees, airbags, all that stuff. And as crazy as it was, the very first thought that went through my head when I stopped spinning was, holy cow, what is this going to do for the sheep hunt? And it once I realized, like, I feel okay. Like, maybe it's the adrenaline, but knock on wood, like, somehow both myself and then the other two passengers, the driver and the other passenger, we walked away from it. And like both cars were
Wow.
total. But yeah, outside of that, there were no injuries, which I was incredibly grateful for. The logistics was just a royal pain in the butt, in the sense that, okay, here I am about to leave my wife, who's a teacher, whose school's just getting going. And then my two kids, who are 4 and 6, and my wife is going to be home alone with them for potentially a month, and now she doesn't have a vehicle. And so, yeah, that last week was a scramble trying to work with insurance to fast track the determination, even though it was clear that the car was totaled. Going through that process to formally get it totaled to determine that we had to buy a new vehicle. So I ended up, my wife and I, we ended up spending the night that otherwise would have been our anniversary night, our wedding anniversary night, going out and buying a car, having to do that because it was 2 nights prior to me slated to leave for the sheep hunt. So it
Dang.
added a ton of stress, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a lot of. I mean, it's easy to gloss over the holy cow, that would have been way worse. Glad you're physically okay. Like, obviously, that's a priority. It's because you were okay and walked away from it. It's easy to gloss over that. But yeah, just the added stress of, I mean, I know what that's like to be leaving your wife and your kids, and you want to set them up where things are as easy as possible and all that for while you're gone. And yeah, not having a vehicle for a wife who's working and has to run around with two kids is incredibly important.
Yeah, so I was grateful that we were able to get it all taken care of, and that it actually didn't impact the actual season date. So thankful for that.
Yeah. Well, new car, happy anniversary. Let's get to the hunt.
That's right. Yeah, so I mean, going in, I ended up driving down to the unit and where the cabin is. What would that have been? 2 days prior to the opener. Spent one day just kind of organizing, kind of reviewing all of my gear. And my plan was to, I have this really ancient beater of a pop-up camper that kind of just stays down there, but I wanted to drag that up into the mountains into a fairly central location to use as a base camp should I need it. And so ended up pulling that up the day before, setting up a little bit of a base camp. And then once I got that all set up, then yeah, I ended up hiking, drove up to a different trailhead and ended up hiking think it was about 7 miles or so back into the wilderness and getting post up for the evening before the opener. So that's kind of how things got rolling.
Weather favorable, like going into this? Were you looking at forecasts and any concerns with like visibility or storms or things like that?
It was amazing. The weather, I think the one thing that maybe I wasn't necessarily planning for is how beautiful it was. And so, you know, I realized that within a first few days is like I hadn't packed any sunscreen or anything like that. But yeah, I was getting roasted because it was so sunny and so hot. And so thankfully, you know, where I ended up hiking into initially, you know, was pretty high in elevation, you know, in the neighborhood of 12,000 feet. And I was just getting eaten. So I was wearing layers, trying to put on a lightweight hood to keep as much sun off me as possible. But no precipitation at all for the first probably week or so in the hunt, which was good and bad, for various reasons.
I don't know if we explicitly called this out. I mean, we talked about how you networked and talked with people and et cetera, but I don't know that we've explicitly. One thing that I think is unique about your story is a lot of times when a guy draws a tag like this, yes, you're networking with people you don't know, but it's really common to grab like, hey, I want as much help as possible. I want as many eyeballs as possible. You know, just to have different guys helping, glassing, looking different directions, maybe splitting up, going different spots, etc. I see a lot of guys tackle hunts like this in that way. But you're going in here solo. Was that very intentional? Like, is that the experience you wanted, or did you just not like, hey, my hunting buddies can't take time off? Or I'm just curious how that was a factor in this.
Good question. And so, it was not one of the kind of like, you know, prereqs for the whole experience. I, in an ideal world, I would have loved to have, you know, either a person or multiple people, along with just to be part of that experience. The challenge that I learned, you know, right out of the gates. And then I can't remember which podcast or which article or something, but I remember reading fairly early on as I was gathering information for these types of tags, especially the tags that span a really long period of time, call it, you know, 30 days. This guy's recommendation or advice was don't count on anyone who tells you they're going to come. Plan on them flaking out in one way or another. And if they come, great, but don't, you know, assume that they're going to be there and plan your trip around that. And so while that kind of was a pessimistic way of looking at it, it also felt realistic to me. And so out of the gates, I had, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 different friends, hunting buddies in various capacities who were all, you know, head over heels, like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I'm going to join. Like, I'll be there. And in the back of my mind, I just had something nagging at me saying like, all right, we'll see it when it comes to fruition. Right. And so, as the planning stages progressed, how it ended up shaking out was the handful of local guys who were down there, they still had jobs, you know, day-to-day jobs. And so their plan was to plug in and overlap on weekends, if at all possible. So that was great, but knowing that that was also limited and that would, trying to coordinate that with, you know, hiking in and out of the backcountry could be potentially challenging. And then I had a couple of friends who were either, you know, further like up here in Denver or potentially even out of state that were contemplating coming. And so, I ended up only having a couple of days throughout the experience with overlapping with some of the local guys. And then a buddy of mine who did end up coming in from out of state, came in from Arizona, and was in when, later on in the hunt. So it was pretty good, but it was a mixed bag. And ultimately it ended up being the majority of the time I spent solo.
Well, diving back into the hunt opening day, I know in some way you saw some sheep. I don't even know if they're rams, but I guess what did, how did the hunt begin for you?
Yeah. So I get up there, you know, the night before in this amazing spot. I'm posted up pretty high and slightly above tree line. Wasn't worried again because of the weather. And so had slept up there just to make waking up to glass really easy. And so opening day comes, I get up onto this glassing knob and overlooking this basin, and it's amazing. I'm turning up tons of deer, tons of elk. Visibility is amazing. The scenery is amazing, but not a single sheep. And so I'm just wondering, like, okay, where could they be? This is too ideal. And so the area where I was at was, it was almost like the basin had a finger that came out from it. So I was on the point of that finger that separated two basins. And so I would, within a short distance, I could be positioned to overlook two different basins and drainages. And so later on after that morning, I switched sides, went over there, and that was my plan to be over there for the evening, to just try to play the sun and the shading. And when I was sitting there, I was posted up for most of the afternoon, and I don't know what it was, but while it was still great, something about that opening basin was just calling for me, even though I knew that the lighting would be terrible as the sun started to set. So I ended up hiking back over, posting up, and this is about, slightly more than an hour, right before sunset on opening day. And within 2 minutes of setting the tripod up with my binos on it, boom, there's some sheep, and not that far away. And it was mind-blowing to me that it seemed like they were in a position that I should have been able to turn them up, by spending so many hours glassing that same exact area earlier on in the day. And it was a band of rams, and one of which, really got my heart pumping. He to me seemed like a nice mature ram, but it then I start having that experience, like, okay, do I come up with a plan right now? Like, do I try to go after this? And I just ended up trying to be as disciplined as possible, to say, calm down, they have no idea I'm here. They were still about 3/4 mile away, and had no clue clearly that I was there. And so I ended up just putting them to bed and, coming up with a plan. And I took tons of pictures. That was another thing of advice was, I had a digiscope set up on my spotting scope, and so I tried to take as many pictures as possible, so that later on that night when I'm sitting there in my sleeping bag, I could zoom in, try to get a better understanding of what caliber of rams I was actually looking at. So really exciting opening day to get some eyes on some rams.
Yeah, that note on just taking photos and or videos, especially in a hunt like this, especially when you know you're going to put them to bed and not go right after them, like that is so valuable, as you said, to get back in the tent, be able to look things over, think things over, really important for sure. Did you, I guess, jumping ahead next day, was plan A to go back after them? When you say like you're not in a rush, are you wanting to check another basin or just get right back after these rams the next day?
It was enough for me to absolutely plan on trying to turn them up again in the morning. And so, I get into a good glassing point right before sun up, and as I get there, I'm looking, and within a few minutes of the sun coming up, I was able to spot one, and before you know it, the other two come out. And at that point in time, I'm really excited, and they were in a pretty difficult spot had I chosen to pursue them. But something that hadn't occurred to me up until that point was, like, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna turn my phone from airplane mode to on to see if I have any service here. And I did that, and sure enough, I was high enough, I guess, that I had a signal, and I had two personal resources that have experienced sheep hunting that going into the hunt, they told me, they were like, if there are ever any questions, like, give me a call, like, happy to help. Even if it's real time, we'll try our best to help you out. And so I ended up texting both of them with the pictures as I'm sitting there looking at these rams and saying, hey guys, this is day two. Like, here's the scenario. I need some advice because just as I expected. I am so jazzed about seeing Rams, period. Like, it feels like these are huge. Should I go try to shoot one? And after a little bit of back and forth independently with both of their recommendations was, you know what, it's day two. Like, there's still ample opportunity. You should chalk it up and keep on going. Try to, you know, check out more terrain. And so I took their advice, and I also had enough understanding that in many cases, a lot of these sheep with such limited tags, they're not going to get pushed around a ton. They might bounce over from ridge to ridge, but not completely leave the territory if I got lucky. So I was rolling the dice, and I ended up backing out, you know, going back to my camp and packing up, and with the intention of hiking a few more miles to get into a different drainage. And so, yeah, I was, it chewed at me the entire walk that day. Like, am I making a terrible decision here in leaving these Rams? Cause yeah, it's not like me to go ahead and pass an opportunity.
I don't walk away from many animals, but the times I have, it's always been really hard.
Yes.
Just when it's like, yeah, I mean, in this case, like, you have a ton of time. Like you said, there's not hunting pressure. It's probably going to be relatively easy to go back and locate them, but you just still never know.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's really hard to do, even though it's probably a smart thing to do in this situation. So,
yep.
Yeah. So did relocating go okay? Still good weather to hunt the next few days? Like, what happens over the course of this walking away from the sheep and getting to a new spot?
Yeah, so I ended up moving into a different drainage in a different basin. That hike was primarily above tree line. And I remember I passed a couple of water sources, and this was a little bit of a lesson learned in this whole thing was, you know, I've always heard it. I've actually never personally experienced it, where it's like, all right, you need to be conscious and cognizant of where your water sources are. So I knew that I was getting low on water. I was like, okay, like there's been enough little tiny seeps and things that I should be able to fill up water as I go. So I passed a pretty significant creek about, you know, I don't know, mile later, all of a sudden I'm realizing like there's no more, there doesn't seem to be any more drainages or seeps along the way that are producing. And so it got to a position where I was like, okay, well, I'm out of water. I need to find something, because I was planning on camping up high again. And I found this tiny, tiny little seep that was able, it had like literally just drops coming out of it. And so instead of, I opted to take the time to painstakingly fill up my bladder through that. Took, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, I think, versus having to drop down close to, you know, 750 feet, 1,000 feet. To just get down to a different water source. And that was just painful. So lesson learned was, I think for the rest of the trip, I ended up packing probably more water than I needed to. But I was always grateful for it, just given how much water I was flying through. So that was a pretty significant lesson learned for sure.
Yeah. It's frustrating to hunt areas where water is so limited like that. There's so many times you take it for granted, right? When it's plentiful and it's everywhere, but it doesn't take long when you get in situations like this and you just realize, man, water is everything. If you don't have water, you just flat out can't live. And when you're trying to live in the mountains and can't find water, gosh, it's tough.
Exactly. So yeah, I was grateful to have come across that seep and, you know, get filled up enough. And, but yeah, I ended up hiking the rest of the way up, got onto this little knob, and got situated in time to be in a really great spot for the evening, kind of late afternoon and evening. And as I was sitting there, you know, in the few hours, all of a sudden some smoke starts coming up from the next basin, kind of over the, I guess, beyond the bowl that I'm looking into. And it wasn't just like a campfire tuft of smoke. Like it was a significant amount of smoke where I'm like, holy cow, there's a forest fire that all of a sudden somehow got ignited and is going. And at the same time, the wind is whipping. And so on my inReach, I start hitting up all my local friends as well as my wife, trying to get an update. Like, what the heck is going on? Do I need to hightail it out of here? Because I'm not lying when I say, from what I was assuming, it was probably within 4 or 5 miles as the crow flies of where I was, and blowing in the relative direction of where I was. So pretty terrifying. And thankfully, everyone kept telling me it was just the remnants of a previous of an earlier summer forest fire that the winds had just kicked up, and it was in a position that the Forest Service and forest fires firefighters were just letting it burn. So they weren't concerned of it spreading, but from what I was witnessing and seeing and experiencing from the smoke and the volume of smoke, like it still scared the heck out of me. But I took their word for it, posted up and glassed that evening into the basin. Identified a ton of hunters. There was a lot of what seemed like deer and elk hunters, archery going on down in there. And then I was able to turn up a pretty big group of lambs and ewes, but not any rams that night. And then as the night progressed, the smoke just got worse and worse and worse. And then ultimately, when I woke up in the morning, it was so terrible that I just opted to hike out, regardless of the danger factor. The smoke was just terrible.
Yeah, just not gonna be able to glass it effectively. Why be there?
Exactly.
Yeah. So was when you say hike out, are you regrouping and like where next, or did you have a plan of where next?
I had my intention going into that, as the initial hunt started, my intention was to stick around in that general vicinity for potentially like a week and a half, up to 2 weeks. And so I did have to kind of go down to plan probably C or D at that point. And so I ended up hiking out, doing a loop, getting back to my truck, and then relocating based on where all that smoke was being produced. And so where I was, it was kind of the westernmost edge of the unit, and the fire was burning on that side, and it was blowing the smoke, toward the east. And so I ended up trying to distance myself. I couldn't get on the opposite side of it because I was outside of my unit. And so I ended up having to just try to distance myself. And so got back to the truck, relocated into an area that I could get some fairly easy access points to get to some glassing points without having to really hike a bunch and just use my truck as a base camp. But even so, like even putting miles in between me, the smoke was terrible. So like after one night of trying to do that and fight that, yeah, the visibility made it virtually impossible to glass at distance. And so I kicked even further, and dropped an elevation even further east, the 2 days, I guess, after I had relocated, into an area that's really lower, like as low as I guess I could realistically think to turn up some sheep in the unit, which was closer to about 8,500, 9,000 feet. Ended up posting up in there, and it was in some BLM, area, over there. And so that's kind of where I transitioned. The smoke was still bad, but at least I could glass. And it wasn't, to the point where it was hamstringing me there. So I was grateful to at least be in that position. But yeah, at that point, I was back to kind of the drawing board to regroup and try to figure out, okay, what is my plan going forward? Because the high country stuff seemed to be a little bit blown up.
And what, like, between these last couple of moves you mentioned, we're now into day roughly what of this total of the
This,
hunt?
yeah, so this would probably, by the time I got down into the lower elevation, this is probably day 5 or possibly even day 6 of the hunt then.
So, what plan did you end up coming with over the next handful of days between the smoke and just kind of evaluating all the options?
So the area where I ended up being was an area where the local previous tag holder had highlighted for me that he had spent a ton of time. And it's an area that is really easily accessible via vehicle, and you know, you don't have to put a ton of you know, time on your boots to get back anywhere. And so I ended up just saying, okay, I'm just going to go down there, check it out. He was head over heels about it, and so I decided to post up. And so I got to a point where there's some roads that really unused roads that I could get up to, and my plan was to just post up and camp there and in a really good glassing position. And so as I get set up, I'm setting up a tarp because the sun was beating down on me and trying to just get comfortable. And I hadn't crossed any vehicle tracks or anything. So I thought I was kind of in no man's land where I was. And as I get set up, I hear this like engine humming, like a light engine humming, and, you know, pay attention. And all of a sudden the four wheeler is coming up the road and it stops. And the guy is decked out in full camo and steps down and, you know, just start up a conversation. And he asked me, he's like, "Hey, what you looking for?" And, you know, "I'm looking for bighorn sheep. You seen any?" And he kind of, I don't know what the look was, but it was a more curious than normal look. And then he says, "So are you Joe?" And it blew my mind. I'm like, "Yeah, who are you?" And ended up being one of the local game wardens. And
Oh, wow.
Happened to be in the area because he was pursuing a lead on some elk hunters who were accessing some, you know, driving their four wheelers where they shouldn't be ultimately, and just happened to come across. And so I had talked to him weeks before, and he knew that clearly I was the only tag holder. So
yeah,
here we are, you know, he's asking how things are going. I'm filling him in, telling him where I had been. And both he and I, as we're talking, are just looking through our binoculars, you know, in this overlook. And as we're talking, we turn up some rams. It was awesome. So here we are together, just hanging out and yeah, turn up a group of four rams. One of which was a nice mature ram, but maybe not in the age class that I was looking for. Yeah, we sat there and watched him for, I don't know, close to 30 minutes. And then he ended up, you know, having to go do his job, but left. But it was just cool to have that and then meet him in person too, after bending his ear in the planning process.
Dude, that's super cool. Yeah, it's always great to make like personal connections like that. That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was decked out in camo, not like in uniform. He was a little bit, quote unquote, like undercover.
Exactly. Yeah. So
Got it.
that's why, you know, I didn't expect that he was a game warden, because it was the four wheeler was unmarked. You know,
Yeah.
he just looked like a hunter going out there. So it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, that's cool. Nice, man. Well, you're seeing rams. Like, the guy who was all excited about this spot and kind of turned you on to it was,
Yep.
you know, being somewhat fruitful here.
Exactly. So that was great. You know, that evening I got some amazing videos and amazing pictures of that group. And similar, looking at the side by side of the first group of rams and the second group, there were two standouts, one in each group. But the ones up in the high country definitely seemed like it had the more mature ram. And so I knew right then and there, like, unless another ram shows up right now, like, I'm not as interested in these guys. It's great to have on the inventory list, but not anything that I'm going to plan to make a play on anytime soon. And so I spent the one night and then the full next morning glassing, trying to see if anything else would come up, turn up, was unable to turn anything else up. And so I ended up deciding, all right, I'm going to go back to the cabin and do a load of laundry, you know, pick up a frozen pizza from the grocery store, try to get some grub and just reconnect with some of the local guys too, who had, you know, possibly been looking at some of the areas that are easily accessible down lower also. And so got back to the cabin and in talking with one of the guys, he's asking me, you know, what the plan is, and he actually has a bunch of horses. And so in that talk, he's like, I'm telling him about this area that I wanted to go explore, and I was planning on hiking into. It would have been about a 12-mile hike to get back into. And he tells me, he's like, well, how about we just go ride the horses? And at first I thought he was just pulling my chain. And I was like, okay, well, you know, my schedule's pretty damn open. Just let me know when. He's like, well, let's go tonight. And so on a whim, all of a sudden I jump at the opportunity to bypass hiking 12 miles to be able to ride some horses into some area that I was really excited about looking at. And so, yeah, ended up
Dude,
fast
that's
tracking.
huge.
Yeah. Getting together with him, prepping everything. Yeah, driving up to the trailhead to get ready. And so in hopes that we'd be able to get back there early enough, you know, prior to nightfall. And so all of a sudden, yeah, the plan just went from plan C or D to Z, because that wasn't at all on my actual plan. It was like something that maybe we had thrown around, but I wasn't banking on. So I was really excited, but also, you know, a little bit nervous. I'm no horseman by any means. So yeah, really, really interested in doing that.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm super excited to hear how it went.
So yeah, so it was me and him and then one of our other neighbors down in that area. So we all load up and yeah, get ready. And so at the trailhead, get ready. And so like I have my fully loaded pack on, have everything. So I'm you know, loaded down, because the expectation was they could only spend one night back there. So I was planning on essentially just hitching a ride, and then depending on how it went, you know, maybe coming out successfully or them leaving me and then me just hiking out on my own. And so I was going in fully loaded with that expectation, being able to get myself out. And so as I go to mount the horse, you know, with a probably in the ballpark of like a 60-pound pack, somewhere in that range, the weight, when I go and get my boot into the stirrup, the entire saddle just completely slides around on the horse. And here I am in my hunting boots, is stuck in the stirrup, and my leg is stuck in it, scares the hell out of the horse. Horse starts jumping around, and somehow in like that split second, I was able to rip my foot out of the stirrup that was caught without any damage. And so like it crossed my mind in that moment, you know, as I'm laying on my back on the ground and the horse is bucking around, yeah, easily could have just twisted my knee or worse, right? In that whole ordeal. So a little bit of a rodeo start getting going in the horseback riding arena.
Yeah, I've been around horses a little bit. I've ridden them in different contexts, but just like enough to have like that very healthy respect for them, you know, and
Sure,
not
yep.
I don't have a ton of confidence, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. So yeah, thankfully after that, smooth sailing, right? But it was, yeah, the healthy respect is the perfect way of doing it, because like I already had that, but it was like such a freak incident. It scared the heck out of both of us, clearly.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, but anyways, after that, like hiked in, or, you know, rode in, we ended up covering about 8 miles, in a pretty well trodden path. And then when we got to the point where, I guess a secondary trail split off for the last bit, up this drainage that I was really excited to get into, it was clear that it's not a common trail. And so we get there in the deadfall. It's on a north facing slope and incredibly steep, but the deadfall is like matchsticks. There's no trail to be seen outside of seeing the line, you know, on Onyx. And so we initially, you know, dismount, try to say, okay, let's try to weave our horses in through this. And I don't know, we probably get 30 or 40 yards and just realize it's an absolute terrible idea. Night's coming, it's starting to get dark really quickly. So here we are just backing out. And, you know, even though it was only a short distance, 40, 50 yards, whatever it was, it took, honest to God, probably close to a half an hour to back out of there, just to make sure that none of the horses freaked out, none of us freaked out, and that nobody ended up getting hurt because of the deadfall, and like the matchsticks crisscrossing each other were just, it was just terrible. So at that point, we get back down to the river, knowing that that plan to get into this little kind of canyon area that I was hoping for was off the table, at least with the horses. And so at that point, yeah, came up with a plan that night where I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna, knowing that the access is terrible, and knowing that even if I decided to hike in here by myself, like it would be at least a mile, gaining elevation through deadfall just sound like a terrible idea, especially if I ended up being successful. Like, how the heck am I going to get this thing out of here? And so I opted to just ride out with him the next morning and relocate again. So yeah, on to the next plan. So then I kind of went back to, I guess at this point, what would have been plan, you know, D or E, going back onto the table once we got back to the trailhead and they left the next day.
Yeah. We have to be getting somewhat close. I know from your story that you met up with someone who ended up hunting with you a bit. Is it that you said, is that the buddy from out of state who is coming in?
Exactly. So,
okay.
So, fast tracking a little bit. So once I left the guys on horseback, I backpacked in to a different area. Spent, I think I spent 2 or 3 nights back in there. Turned up some rams, which was great. Lots of deer and elk at the same time, but the rams were definitely immature rams. Nothing at all even worth pursuing or coming up with a plan for. So I backed out, and at that time that I was backing out, a pretty significant weather front came in, and it was not one that was just passing through. It was one that, you know, was slated to dump a good amount of precipitation for, you know, 3 or 4 days. And so here I am in that period of 3 or 4 days where anything in the high country, the visibility was next to nothing. So I relocated again back down in the lower elevation, because while it was still raining, at least the cloud, like the cloud level, wasn't as low. And so I could hunker down, you know, under a tarp, under some trees or something like that, and still have some glassing opportunities, which is what I ended up doing for the next couple of days, just trying to endure the onslaught of wind and rain. So doing that, and then as I was going through that, that's when my buddy from Arizona ended up coming into town.
And then is the weather going to start to clear now for you and him to like actually get into some country, or kind of same of hunkering down and riding stuff out?
It was as if he brought the Arizona weather with him, which was awesome. So
perfect.
Yeah, so he shows up, and it was amazing. Yeah, back to the type of weather, slightly cooler temperatures than when the hunt started, but bluebird days and really, really nice weather. And so it was great. So yeah, we ended up meeting up, getting him all situated, and then back to the high country. So getting to a trail, trailhead, and then back packing back into the general vicinity where I initially started. The benefit of all that precipitation too was that it absolutely tamped down any of that forest fire that was going on or you know, continuing to burn. So the smoke was no longer an issue up high. And yeah, went back into that general vicinity, not the exact same basin, but that pretty darn close, to try to, with the expectation to spend, I don't know, 4 or 5 days if needed up in that area.
Nice. That's good. I mean, it's a great example of like, yeah, this rain, this weather that's been a bummer for a few days, like has a downside, clearly. But now the bright side is it helped take care of this fire for you.
Exactly. So yeah, it was amazing. Get up there and just enjoying it. First evening back there, don't turn up any rams or any sheep for that matter. And then the next day, same kind of drill in the morning, nothing. And in my mind, I'm thinking, while I'm not planning to relocate a significant distance, it was like, okay, maybe I'll bump, you know, we can bump like a mile or two down the ridge. And as we were posted up, it was getting close to lunchtime. My buddy ended up needing to drop an elevation to go get some water to go refill. And so we come up with a plan. I'm like, okay, well, he's going to go do that. He's going to go break camp, and then we'll reconvene. If I don't turn up anything, then we'll hike out kind of midday, or relocate midday. And he leaves, and then I'm sitting there on this area where I was on a bit of a knife ridge, where I was looking down in one area, and then, you know, within a couple of footsteps, I could jump over, look into the other area. And so I did this for the next couple of hours. And in one of those situations, I jump over and I'm sitting there, and I go, and I need to take a leak. And here I go. I'm up against this cliff face. And as I'm going, like, not at all expecting to see anything, you know, here I'm glassing off miles into the distance. I catch movement pretty much what I would say directly below me. And I freeze. And sure enough, it's some sheep down below me. And I ended up seeing one ram at that point, and I tuck back because it was so steep. I edge back up against the cliff, so I'm out of view. Go back up. I get my backpack, my binoculars, and I kind of start crawling down to the edge and peek over. And sure enough, it's a group of three rams. And one of which, at that point in time, even without even looking at him in the binoculars, I'm like, this guy's a shooter. And so all of a sudden, things change in a heartbeat to say, all right, it's going to happen. And so I get my range on him. I get situated. And the first range that I got was 197 yards. So insanely close relative to what I had been experiencing. And I'm sitting there, and he's facing me. And the angle is so severe that it just wasn't a good shot angle. And so I'm waiting for him to turn to present a little bit better of a shot. And as I'm doing it, I'm in a position where it's almost like I'm standing, but I'm sitting down, but it's so steep that the angle, you know, my foot's there, and I had this little ribbon of rocks that I'm tucked behind that I was using as a rest. And as I'm sitting there waiting for him to turn, all of my weight in my lower foot dislodges about a softball sized rock, and it just goes tumbling down the chute. And all three rams look up, and they're just locked on to what I thought was, you know, me. And I freeze, knowing that the only thing visible is my head and the rifle. And they sit there, and they look at me for what seems to be a really, really long time. And then the two of them go back to grazing. And then the other one finally puts his head down, goes back to grazing, the bigger one. And then he turns. And at that point in time, when he turns, I squeeze a round off, and nothing happens. Shocked. I'm like, what the heck just happened? So I cycle another one in. I'm looking at him, and he literally did not take a step. And he's just looking around. The other two had bolted probably 20, 30 yards up. And at this point now, they're looking down at him. And so I fire again. And at this time, he runs to where they were, that you know, 20, 30 yards up the hill. And then at the second shot, those other two are just up and over the cliff bands before you know it. And so as I cycle a third one in, I'm looking at him, and then I can tell, you know, he's starting to look tipsy and dumps over. And there you go. All of a sudden, it goes from 0 to 60, and I have a ram that's slid down a little bit into this little bit of an avalanche chute, and I have a ram down.
Holy cow. What
yeah.
a crazy, like, turn of events. And just, yeah, man.
Yeah, it was insane.
Dang, that is wild, man. So maybe I missed it, because I was like, I love segments of stories like that, because I totally space out and I'm like picturing myself there and how things are going down. And, like, you know, you get this picture, or I do anyway, this picture in your head of, like, yeah, just seeing this happen. Did I miss in there? Was your buddy still gone this whole time?
He was gone. And so he had dropped off the opposite face to go down to get some water. And
right.
Yeah, so similar, like, he didn't have an inreach or any way to get a hold of him. So here I am thinking, like, Okay, well, he knows the general vicinity that I'm in. And I would assume, even though I was on the opposite edge of the knife ridge, that he heard those shots. And so I was banking on that because at that point I'm like, okay, well, now I need to get down and start, working on this ram. And so I dropped down and fingers crossed that he's gonna be able to find me.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. Did he? Skipping ahead, did he find you okay? Did he hear the
Yeah,
shots and all
so
that?
it w what was mind blowing, I'd spent a ton of time in that area, climbing up and down from glassing points, but it still blew my mind that even though the shot was a 200-yard shot, it took me close to 30 minutes to get down and navigate to where he ended up resting. And so, piecing my way through the scree field and traversing the cliffs and stuff. And so as I was crossing the scree field down below, almost getting up to where the ram was, I hear some hooting and hollering from up above me. And so sure enough, he had heard the shots and just said, screw the water.
For sure.
I'm just gonna hightail it back up there. And he got up to the ridge to be able to see me crossing below. And that's when he was yelling. So then, he was, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes behind me, was able to come up. But the other awesome part about that was kind of got to experience both worlds, like walking up on this ram, spending some time just soaking it in. Like I know it's going to be cliche, but it was such an unbelievable setting. That he where he ended up falling, it was just at 12,500 feet. There's wildflowers all around. He's tucked just below this snow field. And here I am overlooking this basin that's some of the headwaters of the area that I used to fly fish at. And so, like, yeah, the other sentimental piece was like the area that the reason we ended up getting that cabin to begin with was my dad and I both fell in love with that area. But when we bought the property and ultimately started building the cabin, he ended up getting sick and passing away. And so my dad never got to experience the cabin as we know it, or even, really experience that area. And so I just got to soak it in. That whole moment, I got, 20, 30 moments just being like, wow, this is insane. This actually happened. It came to fruition. And then here comes one of my best friends, and we were able to high five and hug and do all that. And then, also snap capture some amazing pictures. So it was incredible, from all those things. So yeah, it was midday, right? I think it happened around 1 o'clock. So like not under pressure to get it done before dark or anything like that. Like bluebird day, it was incredible.
That's amazing, man. I can relate to, obviously it's totally different context, everything else. I don't say anything's the same, but that moment of like getting down to the ram and just like taking it in and the sights and that specific location and like searing that into your memory and appreciating that was very much like my favorite moments of my sheep hunt from Alaska this year was the time between getting to the ram, and then like we didn't rush to like start breaking them down. We just kind of like sat there and soaked it in for like 45 minutes. And it's just like the ram, the place, the thoughts of everything that went into this, like, let me truly like priceless moments that I'll cherish forever. So I can very much relate to that.
Yeah, it was, yeah, still, like, to your point, searing it into the memory, that is so true. Like it's so vivid in my mind, and I'm so grateful that I took the time to make that intentional effort to have that memory.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, we're already taking up a bunch of time, but I'm just like final recap, like how was the pack out and everything else?
So the pack out was the easiest that I've ever experienced, given that while we were 8 miles back, we broke down the ram. It was the first time that I had ever caped something. I've anything that I've ever killed, I've only done Euro mounts with and that I've done myself. And so after watching a ton of YouTube videos and things in advance, like taking a ton of time to cape it, So got him and then relocated it back to an area where it was more easily accessible, and via InReach got a hold of some of our local friends who ended up bringing in some horses. And so we camped that night, and the cavalry arrived the next morning to help load everything out and pack everything out. And so, yeah, I hiked out, didn't get a ride out, but didn't have to hike out a pack, didn't have to hike out any meat. And so it almost felt like it was cheating, because yeah, it was the first ever experience of doing that. So yeah, it was as easy as it could have been. And then yeah, ended up getting it all out at that point. Made a plan to bring the horns over to the regional office, Division of Wildlife office, and get his horns plugged and measured and recorded and all of that. And so, yeah, I was just so stunned. He ended up, the Division of Wildlife ended up saying he was a 9.5-year-old ram, and classified him as 3/4, and ended up being broomed, and like, holy moly, it was just, yeah, it literally checked every box that I was hoping for in this hunt. And then fast forward to that evening, you know, here we have some fresh loin, and I was anxious and eager to see how this thing tasted. So went to the grocery store, got a ton of vegetables, and we just made, I don't even know what you would call it, but this amazing veggie medley with freshly seared loin on a cast iron, and it was the most delicious thing I've ever had. So it was awesome. such a cool, yeah, wrap up to the hunt.
Well, congrats. I have other questions, other things we could get into, other lessons learned. Maybe if we get some time, or like listener questions, we could even do like a follow-up Q&A. But dude, thanks for sharing the story, and congrats. I'm so happy for you, not only killing a ram, but again, the way it happened. And there's so many cool, unique like twists and turns to the whole story. So thanks for sharing it with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And yeah, hopefully, inevitably, when come this April, when people start getting draw results and their minds are blown, hopefully somebody gleans something out of this that helps them be a little bit more successful too. So.
Well, that's a wrap, guys. What a cool story. Congrats again to Joe, and thank you for sharing that story with us, Joe. Listeners, if you have anything for us, whether that is a hunt story, some questions for a future Q&A episode, some guest or topic suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. Just send an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. And finally, if you haven't yet, be sure to hit subscribe or follow in your podcast app so that you receive future episodes automatically, and we'll talk to you soon.